Once more unto the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. And here we are on May 25th, the year of our Lord, 2013. I know that's very not politically correct to say that anymore, but I'm going to say it anyway.
I think you're supposed to say current era.
CE?
Yeah, as if
that's continuing education.
Well, if you think about current era, though, it's like saying these are the modern times. It's true no matter when you say them,
right?
So if you if you're looking at historic notation of before Christ or before current era, if they should say before current era,
well, AD is anno domini, which means the year of domination.
Yeah, well, or the year of the Lord.
Yeah, well, the anno domini, it actually, that anno domini is short for the year of domination of our Lord and King, and it's in Latin. But why are there, you know, we're using a number, and and the number is based on the what was originally and may still be.
About 600 years after the fact, someone deciding that Christ was born on a given date, and they were off by probably two decades.
No. Just a couple, maybe 1 or 2 years. It's a matter of, it's just a few years. But that's beside the point. The reason we use that particular number is because it's based on the birth of somebody. And to say, oh, well, we're not going to talk about the person birth we are calling the year's numbers anymore because it might be offensive to someone.
I think we should call it, rather than AD or CE, we should say CPC, well, current politically correct.
CPC?
CPCE, maybe, era. Current politically correct era.
I don't like the CE because that's continuing education.
So CPCE.
Yeah, but it's still, now we got personal computers involved in
people
there.
People don't even know who we are at this point. We're just bantering on about.
Then, well, we said who we were at the beginning.
I suppose that's right.
No, we did. And is anyone, okay, everybody out there who doesn't know who we are, raise your hand.
Anyone who's not listening.
I don't see anybody raising their hand. Do you see anybody raising their hand?
If you're not listening right now, please call in and let us know.
That makes very good sense.
It must mean everybody's listening because nobody called in.
Right. Probabilities are that no one's listening because we were late getting started today. By the way, at least for the next few minutes till they get it cleaned up, if you are making an attempt to go northbound through the Temple area on I-35, be prepared to have your patience stressed.
Yes. There was a three-car accident.
Particularly if you're a doctor.
Yes. If you have patients, they will be stressed.
Yes.
The EMT definitely had stressed patients.
They were definitely stressed patients all around there. Anyway, so basically it looked like a pickup did a really thorough job running into the back of a car that ran into the back of another car, and everybody was unhappy.
Just be aware that with the drought, people are a little less aware of how to drive on wet roads.
So it's global warming?
It must be.
I think so. There was an accident caused by global warming.
It may have been.
Whoa, tell Al Gore.
I think it may have been an accident caused by global positioning. Where they were on the planet at the right time was also someone else was in the same spot, and that could be a
actually
problem.
If I read the statistics correctly, and I think I may be reading the statistics correctly, if you the probabilities are the person in the car, in the truck, was distracted.
That could be.
And the most probable distraction was a small device that they carry around with them all the time called a cell phone.
Or a child. A small device.
Well,
that
if
they
you
carry
got
around
the child,
with it.
But in the pickup truck, it didn't look like you can't very well put a child in the back seat of a pickup truck when there is no back seat. So
that is true.
I think the probabilities are. Anyway, 2 cents worth from the Personal Wealth Coach. I'll give you some investment advice here. My investment advice to you is that your investments will be worthless if you're dead to you.
Yes.
And as a result, don't go hunting for your telephone if it rings while you're driving and it's in a purse or out of reach.
Particularly in the ring.
Well, this period. I've been hunting around. There have been several fatal accidents in the area recently that were otherwise unexplained, and they generally involve a vehicle driving along at a reasonable rate of speed, slamming into the back of another vehicle, particularly if it's a large truck, with no tremendous effort to slow down prior to hitting the back of the truck. And the thing that has that I was able to find is that in at least a large number of those cases, the person received a telephone call about the same time or immediately prior to them slamming into the back of the truck, which meant that the person very well might have been, there's no certainty here, but there's a pretty high probability that the person was hunting for their telephone so as not to offend the person who's calling them in to get that telephone call. I also read another interesting little thing and said a person who is dialing a phone or doing anything working with a smartphone while they are in their vehicle is somewhat more dangerous than a person who is legally intoxicated.
I could see that, yeah.
And the number of fatalities from smartphones is actually approaching the number of fatalities caused by
drunk drivers.
Which tells you, folks, those smartphones are dangerous. You probably ought to have a breathalyzer test to see if you've been using your phone.
Well, that makes sense.
Actually, if you actually read the dockets and you realize what's going on, the number of people who are getting hammered for texting and being in an accident, the thing about texting and being in an accident, your phone system gives you away. Yep, we have evidence here that you were
on
the
process
of texting. Because, you know, I don't know if you know this, but when you start typing into your phone, the person at the other end, at least on my phone, sees three little dots at the bottom.
That's only if you've got, that's if you've got an iPhone to iPhone communication. That's why the blue, it's blue instead of green.
But the little three dots appear at the bottom, which indicates that the other person is typing. Apparently, as soon as you start typing, it sends a phone, all smartphones send a signal to the phone company, you're typing. And so if between the time you start typing and stop typing, you slam into something, you violate the law in the state of Texas. Anyway, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. Telephone numbers in here are 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
And we haven't taken our clothes off yet.
No, we have not disclosed.
So we're going to have to tell you that the Personal Wealth Coach is not just a radio program. Wait, there's more. You're supposed to have a pregnant pause.
Oh, yes. It was very pregnant. The labor was quite severe.
Good. Anyway, we are, we're also an SEC-registered investment advisory firm that manages investment portfolios for people. We do this for a living. As a matter of fact, I can toot our horn here and say we have been doing it officially since...
Are you supposed to toot in public?
I'm going to.
All right.
Since actually January of 2003, so that makes this our 31st year? 30th year, something like that.
Since January of 2003.
No, January of 1983.
Oh, yeah. I was trying to get the math right there.
Yeah, January of 1983. So we were, it was 30 years.
In January.
So this is our 31st year doing this. And the mere fact that we're still in business is probably the best credit I know of.
Yeah, I've only been doing this for 22 years.
Well, I'm trying to be... The we is there.
The we. So you've been doing this for 30 years, and right. I've been doing this for 22 years.
So, you know, we could really inflate this and say 52 years of combined experience. I don't know if I would want to do business with somebody 52 years of experience in investing.
Yeah, that's a little scary, actually.
Because they're going to be really old. I want you to invest in Studebaker stock. Anyway, if you have any questions, thoughts, or comments about things to do with investing or of that ilk, you're welcome to give us a call in here. Again, 773-1400 or
1-866-597-1400.
So do you want an overall sweeping picture of the economy?
Yeah, I'm working. See, the traffic accident must have also thrown off the internet access, so...
Well, that happens from time to time. But, okay. Durable good orders. We're up 3.4% month to month.
I did see that. That's
and,
very good news.
Year over year, they're up 4.3%. That is excellent.
That means that the goods that people are buying now are much more durable than... No, that's not what that means.
Well, it also helps that Boeing started selling airplanes again after they got their battery box.
What that means, what those numbers mean when we talk about durable good orders and sales, it means large equipment. It means stuff like, for instance, backhoes and bulldozers and airplanes, things that when they're purchased, they stay in service
and
for a long period of time.
Don't forget washing machines.
Oh, yes. Washing machines as well, because people tend to buy washing machines and keep them for a decade.
Yeah, they don't consume them.
No, they're a non-consumable item. Unless
But a consumer buys them, so it's called a consumer good. They're technically called a consumer durable good.
It's true. I've heard of drill sergeants that will eat nails.
Right.
Will they be able to consume a machine?
I think the mere fact that there's activity in something that's called a good is much better than if they were buying, like, baths or something. Because those are Bad in Germany.
Bad, yes.
Yeah, so they're bad. And
durable bad orders are down.
Right, but durable good orders are up.
Fight between good and bad is doing well.
Actually, one of the best pieces of news in this last week was that the bad orders are up.
The bath orders?
The bad, yeah, the bod.
The
bod. Bath, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Because when you buy a house,
There's
generally one or more bods in it.
Hopefully, yes. Otherwise, it would lead to a French situation where people smell a little riper than they should.
Yeah, well, the French are also in the news a little bit, but that's beside the point. Now,
housing sales are up. Is this existing or new houses?
Both. Now, this is an interesting point. Actually, the existing house sales are not up that much, but the price is up because there is a shortage of supply on existing houses. And one of the things that was pointed out in Morningstar, Bob Johnson, who's one of my favorite economists, and if you get into Morningstar and want to read his stuff, if you really want to know what's going on in the economy, very succinctly written in plain English where anybody can understand it that has a ninth grade education, Bob Johnson probably does the best job.
Mm-hmm.
But he pointed out that the growth in families in the economy is about 1.5% a year. And what we've had is a shrinkage in available housing. And those two have got to hit head on at some point. Well, guess what? They're hitting head on. The only thing that's slowing the process down right now is bankers being very, very, very restrictive on how they loan money. And so you get a lot of indications that people are interested in buying things. To sell the item involved is a bit of a problem. Now, that doesn't mean that houses are back up to where they were in 2007. They're not. The prices are not back up there yet. The volume's not back up there. But we are beginning to see the turnaround in housing that we need to see in order to have our economy operating the way we're used to it doing, because housing is one of the biggest issues in our economy. It is the largest single contributor to GDP and to economic well-being in this economy is the sale of houses. Now, new houses, which is a little bit scary in one sense.
New houses are scary.
Well, the fact that we're creating new families at a rate that's faster than families going away. You know, people get old and they die, obviously. So what we have, like I said, about a 1.5% per year increase in families in the United States. Now, that is since about 2007, we really have we've had a net shrinkage in the number of places for those families to live.
I think in economic terms, we're not supposed to use the word shrink. That's too common a word. We're supposed to use negative growth.
We've had a negative growth in the number of housing units available, and as a result, it's a compounded negative growth regarding the growth rate of families.
If we use words like shrink, then the common man will
understand it.
Yeah, then we would lose our jobs.
Actually, we need to find a French word to use there.
Yes, there we go.
And say it with the proper accent. Because let me, folks, if you're ever involved in an investment, and the broker begins to talk about tranches.
Oh, yeah.
Which is a French word that means slice.
Why don't they just say slice? Well, because it's
French.
You need
to understand what it was if you said tranche. As soon as investment people begin to use French, or doctors begin to use Latin, you should be afraid.
Right. And
be very afraid.
We use Greek in our formulas, too. So
formulae.
formulae. Yes, we use, see, even the plural of formula is formulae. It's, see, it doesn't
like indices,
make sense.
Right.
Indices.
Right.
It sounds like we're very smart, when the reality is that we're just using a different
word.
We're
indecisive about indices.
Yes, and we use Greek, and it's my sister and your daughter being the same person. She studied ancient Greek when she was in college.
And learned how to read it.
Yeah, so when we
write it.
We talk about, in our formulae, we talk about the Greek letters that are appearing there, and we say, okay, this letter
I
here.
I recognize one of them.
And she tries to pronounce the letters as we're doing, and I'm like, no, that's not what that is.
That's
that
okay.
is this.
Your
and
brother.
She would say, no, this is pronounced like that, and it means this. And I say, no, it doesn't mean that. It means this. And
your younger brother, who also happens to be my son, that's purely coincidental, I'm sure, knows how to actually pronounce things properly in Latin, and it doesn't sound at all like what I thought.
Yes, one of my favorite Winnie Weddy Weesey.
Winnie Weddy Weesey.
Yes, when I show up somewhere, I say Weenie, and everyone looks at me. But what I've simply said in Latin is, "I have arrived."
Winnie the Pooh. That means the Pooh has arrived.
Weenie. It's actually Weenie, as in
Weenie.
Weenie. I just bellow Weenie. And everyone looks at me, and I smile, and because they know I've arrived when I yell Weenie.
So that's cool. I knew I liked you for some reason. Anyway, back to the economy for just a moment. By the way, you are listening to the Personal Wealth Coach. The week that was, that is still, until tomorrow. Interestingly enough, we had a few declines this week. The stock market is measured by the S&P 500 and the Dow Jones Industrial Average, which is the large cap U.S. stock market. There's a lot of others. Actually, it was down very slightly for the week. And this is what's interesting. The run before that was the longest consecutive daily set of rises in the history of the stock market.
No, that wasn't reported very often.
No, I was kind of surprised to see that. Which, the only reason, by the way, the people who reported that,
the market is going to crash. We've just had the longest run of consecutive market daily rises in history. Therefore, the market is about to crash.
So that's what they're reporting, not what you're saying.
That's what they were reporting. We're not. Yes, market's
okay.
Not about to crash. I really don't think that at all. But that's the only reason I knew that we had the longest run is because the negatoids were saying that. There's a lot of people who would love to be a negatoid. Who was it? Muhammad L. Orion, which everybody kind of hangs on. I hope I pronounced his name correctly. L. Orion or Orion or something. Who is the co-CEO, which is an interesting concept too, of PIMCO. Gave a speech in which he warned that people should be fleeing from risk. They should be fleeing from equity markets because they are now overpriced based on a 10-year trailing return.
When you have a 10-year, this is something, we talked about this a few weeks back, but it's worth talking about regularly. There is a new system for calculating when the market is overpriced, and it's based on trailing returns.
10-year trailing returns.
10-year trailing returns, yes. And 10-year trailing earnings,
right.
on the companies. The thing is, and this is kind of, to me it seems simple, but I guess for some people it's really complex. If you're in business, this is an easy one, people understand this, rental houses, and you've been building up the rental establishments that you rent out. And for the last 10 years, you've had 3 houses, and you now have 5 houses. And you start getting some rent in, and your property values are up. You've got 5 houses rather than 3 houses. Your property values are up. And you look at the last 10 years, and you say, my property values for everything that I owned for the last 10 years are a lot less than what they are right now. Therefore, it's overpriced.
Yeah.
There's some other minor issues, like you own 2 extra houses that might have bearing on that. And when you look at past earnings, the same thing is true. if you're making more profits because you have more houses, then looking at the 10-year trailing earnings to determine what you expect to get next year doesn't work very well. You need to look at what you have right now and compare it apples to apples to the last 10 years.
The other thing is those numbers have a predictive factor if you look at them over the past to a certain point until we get to issues, events like the Great Depression. And coming out of the Great Depression, those numbers would have indicated that right at the point where you should have been investing, it would indicate that the market was about to crash. And the reason is very simple. When we have an absolutely abnormal, rare event where earnings just crashed to negative numbers, which they actually did in 2009, the rate of rise from a negative number is pretty fast. If you get to one, I mean, if you're at one and you go to two, you've just doubled your earnings. And so the issue is that the rise in earnings after 2009 has been very, very fast. So if you include the last 10 years, that takes you back to about 2003, you got to factor in that 2009 that was right in the middle of that, and the end result is that you get some false signals. By the way, the mere fact that one of my indicators, which is very unscientific, what are you doing to your water bottle there?
There was some static electricity.
You were gesturing at his water bottle like he was going to cast magic.
Static electricity. As I put my hand near it, a hair jumped off of my water bottle in the opposite direction. And I pulled it back, and the hair came back to the water bottle. It was very strange.
That was pretty magical.
Yes, we interrupt the radio broadcast to let you know that I just used telekinesis on a hair.
Good. but was it in H-A-R-E or H-A-I-R? You need to keep that secret.
Yes. Well, I see if it were an H-A-R-E, I would have been pulling it out of a hat. In this case, it was only
out of a water bottle. It's a bit more impressive. Anyway.
More impressive.
One of my indicators that says we're about to get a big rise in the market is when the leaders at PIMCO say the market is about to fall. Because it's
say that at the bottom of the market so consistently.
Yeah, and the reason is very, very simple. They're bond managers.
That's what they do. They want the market to fall.
They are scared to death of a market rise. And when you're afraid of something and you're economically dependent upon something else happening,
you tend to look for that thing happening.
Not only do you tend to look for it, you tend to talk up the thing you want to happen.
Yeah.
Because we do affect people like him. Affect the market. That's one of the reasons the market, by the way, took a little dip. But the other one was Ben Bernanke's.
Yes.
Fascinating. I went back and read the transcript of what he said.
So did I.
And Bob Johnson commented on it. He said, Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke's original congressional testimony seemed to focus on current economic weakness and the dangers of premature tightening. That means basically we got to keep letting the easy money in there, and we don't want to back off too soon because there's a lot of dangers involved in that.
Then he said something along the lines
of... He was asked a question. Well, is there some point where you would consider reducing what's called the QE,
the QE3
qualitative
now.
Easing, basically the buying of bonds on the open market by the Fed? And he hesitated and said, well, you know, under ideal circumstances, we could begin to pull back a little bit in September.
If we saw that the economy was growing without further need from us.
But, and of course, immediately the pundits jumped on,
he's going to stop it in December or in September. The analysts started saying, we expect the Fed to stop doing QE3 in September, and the market dipped.
But the fact is, if you listen to what he actually came in there to say, it's no, we are not going to raise interest rates anytime soon. Now, what does that mean? There are two very contradictory issues going on in the economy right now. And I don't want to dominate this thing because you...
No,
okay,
it's
but I did,
fine.
There are two
this
very big contradictory issues going on. They're going on intentionally. Well, at least one of them is.
Congress is doing something intentionally? Wait a minute.
No, that's why that's the one that's not intentional.
Okay, all right.
Congress, by accident, and believe me, it was a series of unexpected and unpleasant events. I mean, this is, what's the name of the
sequestration here?
No, what's the name of that book, the children's book?
A series of unfortunate events.
Yes, it's a series of unfortunate events.
back in 2011 at the last moment. By the way, they're blaming it on the president now, but they did it at 1 o'clock in the morning in the House of Representatives. I don't think the president was there. Yeah. Anyway, they set up sequester.
Mm-hmm.
And they set it up to be so bad
that no one would ever agree
to
do
it.
Well,
now
we have a stick over our head and we must make a decision.
Yeah, well, now we've got it. And oddly enough, the people who said we're going to set up something so bad that it will cause everybody to do the right thing are defending the thing that they set up.
Can
Which
I give
is
an
really weird.
I'm going to give an analogy here. This is something from my life, just
okay.
So that when I was young, I spent a lot of time on the computers. And I, early on, this is Windows 95 era, I found the Windows scheduler. And I realized that I was having trouble at that point in my life, my early teens, waking up, well, not early teens, mid-teens, waking up when the alarm went off. So I said, I will use the Windows scheduler to play a sound that I know I really dislike. It was my own voice. So I made a recording of myself. By the way, if you ever really want to annoy yourself on waking up, make a recording of yourself telling yourself to wake up.
That's the most unpleasant voice
you'll
ever hear.
I almost broke my computer on multiple occasions because I was so upset at it. But
you did get up, though.
Well, I got up.
But then you went back to bed mad.
But then I was so upset that I removed that alarm clock, and then for 2 days I didn't have any alarm clock. Mm. And I think Congress is in that boat right now.
Well, what's sequester, if you go back and read the history of it and the comments on it, both by members of Congress and by economists, nobody has anything good to say about it. And you think, okay, well, it's happened and I haven't felt any real pain. Folks, it really hasn't happened. It won't happen until October 1st. That's
right.
When it will hit like a ton of bricks.
There's only minor
yeah.
pieces of it now, and we've gotten so much extra revenue from the taxes that have been coming in from last year for people selling capital gains stuff because they didn't want to pay the higher rates this year.
Well, among other things. And the other thing, of course, is that a lot of the TARP money is being paid back with interest.
Yes.
And
General Motors
yeah.
and AIG
yeah.
and
so
go down a list of people
making,
paying. They're making profits.
The Congressional Budget Office has said that
they should just
the
get
deficit
into business.
For this year, as they project it, is $200 billion less than they thought it was going to be. But anyway, let's go on. The point is that Congress's actions or inactions or whatever you want to call it regarding the sequester.
I think we should just call anything that happens in Congress nincompoopery.
Okay, well, let's just – but what the
point
is –
they're nincompoopery.
It is pulling money out of the economy effectively. It is reducing expenditures and spending and money in the economy, and it's doing so at an accelerating rate. Well, folks, the economy ain't all that hot yet.
Nope.
Okay? We're not there yet. We're not to the point where we can discharge the patient from the hospital and life support is being pulled very quickly. That has the potential – by the way, it's a – perfect repeat of what we did in the middle of the Great Depression, just as we were coming out of the Depression in the 1830s, in the late 1830s, Congress did precisely the same thing.
Yes.
They said the deficit's getting too high.
We need to
cut
back on
our spending.
We're going
to cut and put us back into the Depression again. Anyway, so what happens is Congress is pulling money out of the economy, effectively. The Federal Reserve is forced to put money back into the economy. It's like you got one doctor that's coming in and bleeding the patient, and the
yeah,
other one who's
well,
soaking up transfusions and
you
putting
seem to
blood
be anemic.
In.
We're going to give
yeah.
you some blood, and the other doctor comes in, you've got too much blood. I'm going to take this right out.
And so what we've got is this, there until we get a budget and a reasonable way forward in the economy that doesn't involve starving the economy from the governmental point of view, then they are the biggest spender in the economy
yeah.
and always
biggest
will be.
Biggest single spender by far.
QE isn't going to stop because we can't. Fundamentally, it's working like it is. It's artificial. Chairman Bernanke, man, I'd like him to run for president. Anyway, has stated over and over again, sequester is a really bad idea and there's only so much we can do to keep it from being devastating. And you think, you know, there's an immediate reaction from a lot of people. Well, sequester's good. The government spends too much money. This is what's really odd. I had a guy in the office last week who told me that exactly. Now, this is the fascinating thing. I actually had several people
tell
me this.
So
if you think this is you,
this is not going to be a surprise.
This is like three or four people have told me this, okay? Every penny this guy makes comes from the government.
Social Security, military retirement.
And I've had a series of people who were very, very upset about the government spending too much money, saying they need to be cutting back. So far, uniformly, they are all people who receive a very good income from the United States government.
This ties right back into what you were saying about PIMCO earlier. They are aware that if the government cuts their income, it's going to be bad for them.
Right.
So they want to look at what the government is spending on everything else and make sure they don't spend too much out there.
But what they don't get, and this
that
is
means
the
they're
problem.
A special interest group, by the way.
What they don't get is that they are the biggest expenditure of the government.
Yes.
And as a result, by demanding that the government stop spending so much money and not raise taxes, they're in essence saying, please cut my pay.
Yes. And to be clear on this, and I've said it on the air many times, if you can go and look up the budget of the United States, what the United States spends, as we don't actually have a budget. And what we spend is 100% of the tax revenue on defense, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security.
Yes.
Anything else, if you're talking about collecting taxes, that's the IRS. Well, that's extra. If you're talking about roads, that's extra. If you talk about anything else that the government does, that is debt spending. And I kind of made it simple because they don't do all of the Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid directly from tax and defense directly from tax revenue. They borrow for some of that. But those three items in the budget account for 100% of our tax revenue.
Mm-hmm.
That means that we have some very serious issues. We have to cut defense. We have to cut Social Security. And we have to cut Medicare if we want to balance the budget. Now, I just said some things. Three things that will get everybody angry at me.
You are never going to make it if you run for Congress.
Yes. The Republicans will not like me because I just said we had to cut defense. The Democrats won't like me because I just said, and the retirees won't like me because I obviously hate old people because I'm taking away their health plans and their income.
Do you know how old I am?
You're an old person. So, but the statement is true. When we look at the math doesn't lie. It doesn't get politically correct. It is simple math, and it's fairly simple to look at and say the math doesn't work. If we are going to balance the budget, we have to cut in areas that people don't want to cut.
Do you know where I am on this? Is I get nothing from the federal government and pay a lot to the federal government.
Yeah, I'm in that same place.
So
they
I think
continually take more
go
from me.
Into rebellion immediately and demand that they pay me a lot of money.
I think we should go drink tea.
I don't particularly care
maybe
for tea.
Throw some tea in some water.
Actually, there's a very good reason that we don't drink a lot of tea, and I won't go into that.
But oh yeah, right.
Has to do with taxes.
Yeah, it does have to do with taxes.
Anyway, the whole thing that's going on this week is a tempest. I love this tempest in a teapot. Now,
but not a teacup.
Right.
Why is it in a teapot?
Maybe it is in a teacup. A tempest in a teacup, is that the appropriate?
I believe so.
Well, then we'll use the tempest in a teacup.
I thought you were just making a new idiom.
I thought the tempest was in the pot.
Right. Well, it might be. But
it
I
is in Colorado.
You can put your tempest in the pot if you wish. Otherwise, we'll leave that to
leave it in the cup.
In the cup, yeah.
What size cup?
A cup of pot, is that what you're saying?
I don't
know.
Oh,
boy, this is going in the wrong direction.
Anyway. So what's boosting the economy? And believe me, the economy is growing. Now,
yes, it is.
Frankly, a little more sense out of Congress and the economy could be growing a lot better, but that's neither here nor there.
Wait, you're asking for the impossible.
I realize that.
Sense from Congress.
And I think as a result, we will see the economy return to what we historically have considered normal about 2015 or 2016. What does that mean in practical terms? That means that the market, for those of you who are investors, generally speaking, the market has a number of years in front of it of continued recovery.
Yeah. When we look at earnings, when we look at growth in the economy, there is no massive underlying issue in the stock market. There are some issues in the bond market. It's just
the big ones.
Big ones. They're overpriced. There aren't as many of them out there. And they are being fought over by those that are left. And the interest rates are really low, which means as soon as interest rates start up, there's going to be a lot of people out there that make the decision to put new bonds on the market, which is backwards. This is backwards thinking. People do this, though. Right now, companies think we are in a wonderful state where if we want to put bonds out there and get a big influx of money, we can do it at any time, and it's going to be cheap. They've been putting it off. They've been deciding not to do it.
They're going to be doing it.
Right. And as soon as interest rates start up, they're going to have a panicked reaction. Oh, well, we better get our bonds released before the interest rate goes up anymore because we don't want to pay all that extra interest.
Let me throw another little angle into that. I read why Apple, which has a huge store of cash, why they're not bringing it, why they're not issuing it as dividends. Instead, they went and borrowed money.
To issue dividends.
To issue dividends.
Well, they don't want to bring in the taxes.
The point is that the money, this huge cash reserve that Apple has, is outside the United States.
For a reason.
They've already paid taxes on it, for instance, and this is fascinating.
Uh-huh.
Due to some appropriate loopholes that were designed by the Irish government.
Uh-huh.
For everything Apple sells in Europe is manufactured in Ireland.
Right.
And the Irish government loves them because they employ over 4,000 people.
Those people are paying taxes. Yeah. Yes.
But since it's owned from the United States, the Irish government, get this, taxes them very, very, very little on their gains in Ireland, on their income in Ireland. Okay?
Yes. Right.
Like 1.5%.
Uh-huh.
And if they bring it back United States, they will wind up paying about 35% of that to the federal government.
The United States has the second highest corporate tax rate in the world.
What's the highest? Romania or something?
Japan. It's 0.4% higher.
Okay, but the point is that the silliness of our tax code is a great drag.
Right.
Because and Apple was raked over the coals by the guy who more than any, Levin, I think his name is, who more than anybody else have helped put this tax code together for gaming
the tax system.
Wait a minute. It's the law?
It's the law.
And they basically designed their operations to pay the lowest taxes that was legal? Is there something fundamentally wrong with that?
It is legal. That's the point.
He said it was unpatriotic.
Right. Well, which it's unpatriotic for us to take any money when it comes down to it. It's just the extent of the patriotism. See, if we just give it all, write all of our money off to the government, that would be ultra patriotic.
From his perspective, I'm sure.
Right. I'm sure he's not doing that on his own taxes, though.
I don't know. You never can tell.
And this is something that I found fascinating. Okay, so you mentioned the Tea Party, or I mentioned the Tea Party, but we'll come back. The original Tea Party, the people that went out and dumped the tea into the bay.
They were objecting to a sales tax.
Yes, they were objecting to
the
fair tax. Only it was unfair because they weren't representative. Okay, so if the United States Congress decides that they need to close off, this is the words that they're using, this corporate tax loophole, by taxing corporations based in the United States on income that they made elsewhere, that's obviously there's a minor consequence, and by this
everybody will leave the United States.
That's the minor consequence. That's a possible minor consequence. Now, and you say, wait a minute, minor consequence? The big companies that we're talking about: Google, Apple, Amazon, eBay, Walmart.
Don't forget General Motors.
General Motors, all of them leaving, and I say that's a minor consequence. Because the major consequence is the last time that someone tried to tax overseas money that belonged to United States citizens before they were citizens.
We had a revolution.
The government.
Yes.
And if you remember the two bills, the Senate bill and the congressional, the House bill, SOPA and PIPA. Do you remember this? SOPA PIPA? Okay. Do you remember these bills?
Go ahead.
They were basically the online protection, and and it's basically the government would have control of everything. Once those things were became aware, once these big organizations, same organizations that we're talking about, Google, Yahoo, Amazon, eBay, Apple, once they became aware of what was in those bills, remember that some of those sites shut down for a day. Can you imagine going to Google and it not being there? And then you go to Yahoo because that's your other alternative.
You can't buy anything from Amazon.
And you can't buy anything from Amazon, and eBay is not available. And there's just a page that says the U.S. government wishes us to leave the country.
Yeah, I can imagine that that would...
I think the Congress would have a problem. And
do you think Senator Levin would be upset by that?
It could be a little bit, yeah.
And he'd probably hold a House Un-American Committee.
Right now, there are some very easy things to say about the corporate tax structure of the United States. There's some vague areas in the income tax for personal income. Are we at the Laffer point? Are we raising the right amount of revenue? But when it comes to corporations, there is no doubt in my mind that the tax code is higher than it should be.
Right.
If they lowered the tax code on corporations,
they'd make more money.
They would make more revenue.
Absolutely.
There's no doubt about that because it happened. We don't have to guess about it. Anywhere. France, for instance.
Frankly,
France gets more revenue as a percentage from its corporations than we do. And the French have an absurd tax code.
And this is the point. And I hear people say, well, but those corporations should pay lots of taxes. The point is all of the profits from corporations go somewhere else.
Exactly.
They get paid out in dividends, or they get...
They get paid by you if you invest.
I know you're going to... Some of you will think this is completely nuts. Technically, we should not have taxes on corporations.
It's double taxation.
By the way, that would eliminate the IRS problem with this 501c4 corporations.
Yeah.
Just eliminate... Texas...
Corporate tax code shouldn't exist.
Below a certain size in Texas, corporations are not taxed. Now, once they get above a certain size, they pay a franchise tax, which is not huge. But the point is, if the federal government were to do that, I think it would increase the revenue across the board because people would be taking money out of the corporations, paying taxes on it as they took the money out at the personal rate.
Right, which is very reasonable.
But right now, it
has to stay there. They don't want to pay the taxes twice. The dividend,
and they're penalizing companies for spending money. And then they wonder why the economy is running slow.
Right. The Supreme Court just a few years ago made a ruling that the Democrats really hated, and it had to do with campaign finance.
Right.
That corporations are people. That corporations are just a group of people together, which is what they are. Because who owns a corporation? The shareholders own the corporation. Are shareholders people? Yes. So if a group of people get together and they wish to express their freedom of speech, you can't stop them just because they own the thing together. That's what the Supreme Court said.
Right.
Using that same concept, a corporation paying taxes and then giving its owners the money, at which case they then pay taxes again.
It's silly.
It's silly. The whole structure is top-heavy, and it's designed to give congressmen the ability to be demagogues when they're bringing Yahoo and Google and
we're coming
Apple
up on the end of the hour, so I want to make a disclosure here. We are in the business of investing people's money.
Yes.
And if Congress were to eliminate the corporate income tax, there's absolutely no question in my mind that the stock market would shoot upward like the proverbial rocket ship, because earnings would suddenly get much, much higher for corporations. So it would be to our advantage if Congress took that action. Therefore, we have a conflict of interest.
Yes, we do. A major one.
Here we are at the end of the hour. I do want to say a couple of things real quickly. We have another hour of the Personal Wealth Coach coming up. But I do want to leave you with this. Bob Johnson at Morningstar and I agree, and considering that he has a PhD and a whole bunch of other things.
That means that he is
really
very
smart
for agreeing with you. PhDs are irrelevant. He's got to be smart.
I'll tell you what's happening in the economy. We have pent-up demand. We've been talking about this for years.
Oh, wait a minute. You say pent-up demand or pent-up? Because
pent-ups
are like these pictures from the 1950s.
Pent-up demand where people have not spent money. The average age of the automobiles on the United States highway is the oldest they've ever had in our history. Yeah, they're made a lot better, but people are still not buying things. And the pent-up demand is what's driving the recovery right now. We have tremendously increased productivity And again, that was imposed by Congress in an inefficient and in an accidental way. They basically insisted that corporations pay a lot more money per employee to punish the corporations for something. I'm still not sure what. And as a result, they don't want to hire people as rapidly as they used to because they're getting taxed. We get taxed in our business when we hire somebody. We get penalized for hiring people.
Yes, we do.
Because the government wants more money. And that's a problem. The issue is that we're now, the automobile industry is up to 90% of its production in 2007, of its record production. I think it's 2006 it had record production. But they only have 70% of the people working there that they had before in the total auto industry, which is why we have unemployment, which is why we have a lot of things wrong in the economy. Okay, so pent-up demand is kicking us forward. That's the big thing. Congress is holding us back, and that's basically what we want to end the hour on.
Yeah, if you'd like to contact us off the air, we have voicemail waiting at 947-1111 or 1-800-914-7526. That's 800-914-PLAN. You may email us at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com, or you can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com, and listen to podcasts. Until next hour, this has been The Personal Wealth Coach.
Radio 1400 KTEM. Serving Central Texas, KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.